164th day of the new year. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County District Attorney Maggie Fleming.
Good morning, Brian. How
nice
are you?
Nice to see you not in a fire suit. Seems like everybody I'm seeing driving up and down is, you know, I didn't know they had this. I want to find out from Woods tomorrow. CDF was pulling, it looked like a single wide, full length mobile home command center.
Wow.
Going up in preparation for more of the lightning strike fires in Del Norte and Curry County we're dealing with. But I'm glad I'm not a fireman. I'm glad you're not a firewoman. How's that?
Thank you.
Yeah, you too, huh?
Oh. I put out enough fires just at the office. So.
Yeah, I was kind of trying to bring you over to where the water is so you could drink of it. But you said you brought in your quote.
I recognize
the guy.
Yes, today's quote is from Benjamin Franklin. Justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
That really hasn't been played out recently, has it?
No, it hasn't.
Just kind of move on. The situation that New York is dealing with those two escaped, convicted murderers, and I don't know if they were on death row or if New York even has a death row. If something like that happened here, and I know we don't have that kind of criminal here, but let's say it's in Pelican Bay. You know, first breakout, somebody's able to, or a couple of folks are able to get out. How would the local legal community, law enforcement community react to that? Is there a plan? Is there or if there was a massive break out of the Humboldt County Jail, is there anything that you're aware of that would bring everybody together and try to deal with this? I mean, I'm stunned how long this thing has taken, and I guess it may be playing out right now. You know, based on some of the news stuff, but it's kind of intriguing how this is playing.
I think there's a lot of sort of good components to our county, and that is that law enforcement, all of the agencies have regular meetings. They're very aware of each other, services they can provide, and they already respond to each other's needs. So, you know, if Arcata's got a major incident, HSU and the Sheriff's Department will respond, as well as the CHP. So I think they would be well equipped. I think, again, that's one of the advantages of a smaller community, is everybody sort of knows each other. I have no doubt the fire department would immediately be, you know, assisting in shutting down roads. You know, New York, I think, is stopping every car in and out, searching trunks, those sorts of things. And I have no doubt.
Kind of like marijuana.
Right. I have no doubt we'd be easily, teamwork would immediately step in to handle that sort of a process. And we have had escapes from the jail and Eureka and the sheriff
hasn't
worked
been
well.
Lately, though.
Not lately.
I remember
the
bed sheets.
Been a few years, yeah. The guys who decided to go out with the electrical cord and just plugged them in. And
oh, former regime. You just kind of leave it there, huh? KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
What makes our local Humboldt County Park so special? It could be the family feeling of the picnic areas and playgrounds at Freshwater Park, or the chance to take a dip in the river at Swimmer's Delight or AWA. Perhaps it's the stunning views and boating at Big Lagoon. Maybe it's spending the afternoon strolling the Hammond Trail or enjoying a walk while the sun sets at Clam or Moonstone Beach. Or maybe, just maybe, it's all of these. Get out and enjoy your Humboldt County parks. There are parks, and they're right here in your own backyard.
Good morning. KINS News and Information Time is 8:24. We're back talking shop with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, there's what I would consider, and I know we're all kind of getting a little dulled about what a significant arrest or marijuana find is, but I think somewhere around $7 million has got to be significant still, even in local minds. Yesterday, What happens to an arrest with all these things swirling now about is it not, who's where's it legal, where's it not legal, what's the feds say versus the locals? How are you able to determine whether or not something like this is worth going after? I know ethically and morally there's that, but the legal component of it is something of that value worth going after? Is $1 million retail worth going after? Is $100,000 worth going after to prosecute?
We have always evaluated it based upon the current state of the law, and then also the circumstances in any particular, whether it be cultivation or sales or transport. So as far as, what the quantity is, what the record of the person is, whether or not there's any potential issue of violence, those sorts of factors are everything we look at. The feds have not really been that involved in marijuana cases. It's interesting, the whole change now going with tribal lands. I'm not really sure what's going to happen as far as that. But historically, what I've seen is the feds have sort of been hands off. I had a case that occurred on in the national forest, and it was the person had an assault weapon. They were not a native to our country, and the U.S. Ranger who found it, seized it, and dealt with the level of violence that could have occurred there, said to me initially, I think this is going to go federal. And I said, well, he's in custody, so we've got to proceed with preliminary hearing. He's got time not waived, so we got to do it within 10 days. Let me know. And he showed up for preliminary hearing, and I said, I don't think they're coming to take the case. And they never did. And that, to me, was one of those ones that sort of hit every mark that they asked us to hit. So I'm just not really sure, where the feds are on the whole issue.
Does burying head in sand qualify as one of the possible management styles regarding this stuff? I mean, you said immigration, you said federal land, certainly development in the forest without permits is a big ripping deal too. The assault weapons.
Right.
I'm not sure what could have been added into the mix to make it more viable for them to come into play.
And I don't either. The only other thing I could think of is if we were closer to San Francisco, because I do, I do see the concern they have with we're so far away.
Yeah, out in the boonies.
Yeah. Right. And it's just sort of.
But there's not an awful lot of U.S. forest land in San Francisco.
No, there isn't. There isn't, but.
Holy cow. Did the congressman have it? Was there any outreach to him to say, hey, we got all this stuff. What do you think?
I didn't do anything like that. For me, it was a pretty straightforward local case as well. So I just proceeded, and the U.S. Ranger was, happy with that. So we took care of it. But it was one that struck me as this pretty much hits every one of the points that makes it a federal case.
Oh, kid, child labor could have been in there.
That's true.
And may have been. Who knows? But I would think for sanity's sake, almost, to have a sense, okay, where is that line that I would, time permitting, would push it up the ladder and say, hey guys, if you're going to turn your back, that's okay, let us know. If there's going to be involvement, let us know. The sense I have with others in the law enforcement community, the frustration is the lack of consistency. Like you say, if it's in this jurisdiction, it's okay. In this one, it's not. Well, that's not how the law is supposed to be enforced.
Right. And, I don't know what exactly. I've had the discussion. I'm just not sure what their dividing line is. I do know, obviously they've taken a couple of the homicides that we've had related to marijuana. And those are very, very major cases.
That was missing. You didn't find a body there, did you?
No, we didn't.
Or
thankfully,
an environmental spill, maybe some Roundup spilled on the dirt or something.
Right, but I do appreciate that they have taken those homicides that they have, and in fact, we have contacted them about a couple of others because we could really use the help dealing with our very high caseload right now.
So if for them to look at it, you have to draw, not only put the dots in, but draw the line to make it fall under their jurisdiction?
Oh, yes. They can't. They cannot assume a case unless it meets certain points for their jurisdiction.
So you try to find those points, shine them up, and give it to them?
Yes.
How quick do they move? Or is it like processing through a local one that you would handle, or does it take longer, or does it move quicker?
I would say that they can be, they're aware of it early on, and then sometimes it takes them a while to determine whether or not it is going to be one that they can accept. But then once it's theirs, you know, sometimes they move quickly, sometimes it's sort of just like our local jurisdiction.
Oh, that was said like a politician. I thought for a second there you weren't one. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:36. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County's DA, Maggie Fleming. Maggie, with some of the different laws that go into effect at the first of the year, how long does it take for everybody to kind of get normal with it?
It happens pretty fast. Prop 47, I think, was the one that was really hard because that was the one that took effect the day after the election. So literally, you know, I was in court. I was with county counsel's office then, but I was in court on my cases, and I was watching the criminal cases sort of unfold, and people who were appearing for their preliminary hearing, meaning it was a felony, were being told, we're going to be resetting this for a jury trial because now it's a misdemeanor. It happened that fast. And then we've dealt with a huge surge of petitions to have cases that were previously, you know, convictions for the felonies that are now deemed misdemeanors under Prop 47 to have those reduced. So the interesting part is it has this initial sort of tidal wave effect of so many cases, but within probably about a year, that's dropped off and everything resumes, you know, and it becomes sort of normal.
So the you said normal.
I know. I use that term.
You're now catching yourself before I get the chance to play with you. Okay.
Well, you do make sort of an eye thing where yeah, I go, yeah. Did I just say normal?
Wrong word. To standardize the process with any of this stuff, do the old guys get it quicker than the new guys?
I don't really know that I could say there's a difference. I think the trickiest part is when you're looking at pending legislation trying to gauge whether or not it's going to pass, because then you do want to be ready, particularly with Prop 47 where it was going to take effect immediately. Everyone was trying to gear up for what will this mean the next morning. And we had meetings in advance to discuss how the courts were going to handle it, how the DA's office was going to handle it, how the county council's office was going to handle it. So we were preparing for that. Not knowing which way it was going to go.
Case law is, at least to the one class I had, case law was pretty critical in the whole process. You have what's written on paper, but then you have the judicial interpretations, you have the inertia from the communities and the cultures and the jurors and on and on. How long does it take case law to start to influence? Let's use 47 as an example. Okay, goofy piece of legislation. Whether you like it or not, it was kind of strange. Okay, put into play whatever the adoption date is of a piece of legislation or measure. But you have to go to trial a certain amount of times before you start to develop the case law. Is that a year? Is that a year and a half? Can case law really change the interpretation of what everybody thought it was going to mean to what the actual application results in?
Absolutely. And we do, case law comes about fairly quickly because, you know, anytime there's this sort of change, there will be cases that are occurring within a week or two of that change. And so those cases go up on appeal. Sometimes, because the issue is so important, the DA's office will seek a writ, meaning we're asking for urgency. We're asking for the Court of Appeals to review this particular question in very short time. And then what's nice is the statewide District Attorneys Association have sort of listservs where you can be on specific topics via email. So anytime something comes up, you know, so I'll get an email from Tehama County saying, hey, we took this issue up. Court of Appeals is looking at it. Just want everyone to be aware. And then we adjust depending on how the judges rule. So it does happen in real time. The funny part is that you can have changes in the law years and years after. I mean, we can proceed having always looked at one issue a certain way and then have a Court of Appeals decision come down 10 years out, 15 years out, be surprised by it, and all sort of have to readjust based upon that decision.
Do those impact retroactively?
It depends, and the judges can decide that as well. Sometimes it's very specific. It's going to be moving forward. And a lot of them are, you know, really just sort of nuancing what we consider. I mean, one change that occurred years ago that was pretty critical is when we started having attached garages where you went right into the house from the garage. That became first-degree burglary. To go into somebody's garage became first-degree burglary.
Whereas before
you had to actually go inside the house, inside of the residence per se. And so that was a change. And it's, you know, it's kind of a sort of interesting because the more you look at cases, the more you see judges are trying to fine-tune specifically what does this specific
past judges' determinations
right and yeah, that's exactly it. It's case law isn't just judges looking at the actual code section. Sometimes they're looking at prior decisions by other judges and then determining should that still stand as good law
or a law that the community will accept.
Right.
KINS News and Information Time. I feel like I'm editorializing. What a stunner. It's 8:42. We'll be back with more from Maggie Fleming.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, a couple of quick updates. Last time you were here, you said you had a huge backlog of major crimes that you were trying to put through the funnel.
Yes.
And the funnel wasn't wide.
No.
Have you had any relief in that? Has that changed?
No, we're, in fact, unfortunately, we've had a couple more in the last couple 4 to 6 weeks. Some of it's just they're older cases, but the toxicology work and other work's been completed on them, so I'm filing them. So our caseload is still going up. The good news is Measure Z, we've gone through all the budget hearings, public comment, and the budget will be finalized in a couple of weeks, and I do look like I'm going to be able to get a number of more positions, and I've got my ad already posted on the statewide website for district attorneys in the hopes that I might recruit folks with a little bit more experience because we really need that to.
But the, some the of the other, efficiencies with experience that come with experience.
Yes,
to get this stuff
yes,
through.
And yeah. People who can maybe handle a caseload that involved homicides and vehicular manslaughters. The other concern, frankly, that our county has is we don't have enough courts. We have four superior courts that handle criminal cases. We were due. I mean, I think every time the state looks at us, they say based on the number of cases, we should have, I think it's two more courts. They haven't provided the funding for that. So,
two more total courts or two more superior courts?
Two more superior courts.
So having traffic courts back out in like Fortuna and Arcata?
No, two more superior court judges and the ability to handle the felony caseload, criminal caseload.
Do we have enough people to serve on juries? I know you guys spin out a whole bunch of them just based on how many invitations I get. If you had two more courts going through the normal process, would you be able to seat juries?
I think so. When I was first here, because we had the judicial districts, we had three superior courts, but they were running trials most of the time. And now we have four superior courts, but that's to handle all the preliminary hearings, all the motions, all the sentencings, and the trials. So right now, we only have one court in a jury trial. And I can remember one day when I walked out in the hallway and there was actually four courts running and all four of us were either doing murder cases or attempted murder cases. So it, you know, there needs to be the ability to do more of these cases by the courts in order to actually start getting them done.
You said you had some happy that you wanted to get
out.
Yes,
I went to the drug court graduation on Friday. And that was a wonderful ceremony. It was very inspirational. 12 people graduated. Some of them had been in the program anywhere from 18 months to 3 years. And it's tremendous to see people who have overcome that addiction and are moving on with their lives.
Could you do more of it?
I think it's getting back up to full capacity. It dropped off significantly after Prop 47, but I think we're moving back to filling all the available spots, which
47 was really a bellwether for the department, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yes, it was.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
We've been Talking Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Join us tomorrow morning for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Have somebody love to see you tomorrow.